Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Not going to lie, Josh Brown, at this point, I should probably come up with some sort of intro that is more rooted in the fact that we are the News Lads and this is the News Lads. But this will also be the intro. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Mr. Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott. I like to, like, just being here and looking at you work every single week, trying and scrambling to do an intro and make it relevant to the title of this podcast. The fact that we have a title at all, to me, is very impressive. So I think we're 1-0 up, if anything.
And I think so. I'm not going to lie as well. If the opening audio to that sounded a bit echoey, I didn't have my headphones in. But now that I've done that, it should be a little bit better. We haven't got time to restart because we've sort of been trying to cram a million things into today. So we're just going to keep going. The news doesn't stop. The lads don't stop. Just keep going. So first order of business is Cyberpunk 2077, the thing that should clearly be a bigger deal than it is in regards to positive press. But the latest thing is that Poland's own Office of Competition and Consumer Protection have opened an investigation into the game's continued development. Basically, they're a sort of consumer watchdog group that sort of check in when something is on fire enough that they need to sort of step in. And they haven't done any action yet in regards to forcing anything on CDPR. But they have released a statement saying that they'll be checking out how the manufacturer is working on introducing corrections or solving difficulties that prevent the game from being played on different consoles, and also how CDPR intend to act in relation to people who have complained and are dissatisfied with the purchase due to the inability to play the game on their equipment, despite the manufacturer's previous assurances, which is the floweriest way possible of just saying we're going to try and make sure it's not knackered in the next few months. So hopefully with some big official board keeping an eye on them, wagging a finger or two, It'll crash anymore.
It might have been a part of that report or something slightly different, but I saw that they might be getting charged 10% of their operating income from like last year if they don't push the patches out in time and get it to a specific state. I think that was just, it was in some kind of write-up that I was reading this morning. Sorry that I can't remember. This is the new news, lads. I should have been more prepared, but I am not. I just go on things I half saw this morning.
Oh, the amount of stuff.
The point is that obviously, yeah, they're getting like pressure from, from the investors, from, actual firms inside the country and stuff like that. But I don't think this is going to be an easy fix. Like, we've been talking about this for a while now. And even though patches are incoming, even though development is still ongoing, like, I just feel like there's too many issues and there's too many problems for it to be just smoothed over with a couple of band-aids. Like, maybe it's going to be enough to meet the pressure from the investors and such and say, like, look, we are putting the work into it. But at this point, like, I was messaging you earlier and I was just saying, like, I want to love this game, Scott. And if I waited for a proper next-gen version, I would have loved it. If I played it without all the bugs, if I played it without all the glitches, if I played it with the highest graphical settings, man, like, I'd have bloody loved this thing. And it sucks that all of the news coming out of it is just kind of related to just how much of a complete disaster it was from like a internal perspective and a management level, in how even the investors and even the people who, CD Projekt Red answers to felt like they were swindled, in regards to the state of the game, at least on past-gen consoles.
Yeah, the biggest thing they have to overcome is, I think it's Marcin Iwiński's comments that he was asked months before the release about the state of the Xbox One and the PS4 versions, and his exact line was that he was very surprised by how well they played on previous consoles, which is the easiest thing to hold up now and be like, well, you were literally lying, because there was never a state of this game that was running smoothly unless you took a crowbar to it in between the last few months of development or something. So that stuff is all, that was part of the ongoing ongoing US class action lawsuit where a lot of the shareholders and stuff are just saying like, look, we invested in the different version of the game in regards to how you sort of advertise your shareholders and then stock and everything. So I think there's all that. And then obviously in their home country, they've got the whole Polish group looking in on them as well. And more of just like a general mainstream sense, like kind of what Watchdog does in the BBC, in England with the BBC and everything. So it's a big old thing. But in terms of other news stories, maybe more positive news stories, you've got a nice little selection over on your
side. I do have a selection. Some good, some bad, some middling. But I want to ask Scott Tilford, how do you feel about Killzone? Just in general.
Oh my God, right. Man. When you messaged me this before we started, I didn't know this was going to be one of the main stories, but you sent me the headline saying that they've shut down the website. I rejoiced. I typed in capital letters and I thought, thank the maker, because Killzone has been this big old concrete noose thing, whatever words you want to use, dragging Guerrilla Games down. Because look at how much life and vibrance and energy is in Horizon Zero Dawn. I got on board with Killzone. I was there at the beginning of it, and it was never the Halo killer. It was never anything other than a big old gray and brown smudge that has just, I hate that thing. I hate everything that thing represents, and Guerrilla are so much better without it. Let Killzone die, mate.
See, in classic News Lads, Scott and Josh fashion, we couldn't be more apart on this one, because I really like Killzone and what it stands for. I agree. It was never like this Halo killer. It was never as big as it should be. It was never as refined or had its own identity as much as it should have had. But I enjoyed it. I thought there was potential there. So yeah, to circle back around to what the story actually is, like you said, the Killzone website has been completely shut down. If you try to go to killzone.com right now, it just redirects you to playstation.com. This comes with some functionality being removed from the previous games as well. For instance, you can't use clans in Killzone Shadowfall anymore. So for all intents and purposes, Sony seems to be distancing itself from the Killzone brand and kind of semi-retiring it by removing the website or whatever. And like you said, it seems to indicate that Guerrilla Games, the developers, are completely sticking with Horizon as their main franchise from now on. And we might not see Killzone for a good while now. But to me, man, like, I do think this sucks because Sony and PlayStation don't have like a proper first party first person shooter anymore. Yeah. And I feel like it's a genre that they've just kind of forgotten about. They've pivoted away to make their brand based on these third person story driven action games, which is all well and good. I love every single one of them, including Days Gone. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind a bit of, you know, variety in there. I wouldn't mind them taking another crack at first person shooters, especially in the multiplayer sphere, and giving us something interesting. And the fact that Killzone is there, it doesn't even have to be made by Guerrilla Games. It could be any studio given the reins of it, you know, breathe some new life into it. I just feel like there's more to be done with that, especially in an era where we've seen so many PlayStation franchises come back, be reinvigorated. Like, do the same thing to Killzone. I'd want to see it happen.
But you see, you've set me up for a lovely little bowling 10-pin smash here. But what's the word with the... The thing where you get all the 10 pins, it's very tiring.
Strike's
the word that I want, yeah. Because this isn't an interesting game. This has never been an interesting franchise, at least not to me. And the thing is, like, Guerrilla just acquired those two dudes from Rainbow Six Siege, like their multiplayer director and the level designer or something. So it's like, it always seemed like, you know, we've sort of ran with stuff of like, oh, it seems like Killzone's going to be revitalized on the PS5 and everything. But I think they were, and I said this in the original video when we did it, they would always be so much better off just severing Killzone altogether. And for me, it's not that I more hate what Killzone represented in retrospect, and I remember each installment coming out and just being a little bit naff. Like, it was fine. I like how weighty the weapons were, but I always thought it was a bit naff that you had to switch to a grenade separately and little things like that that just kept it away from how well something like Halo played. So for me, you know, ditch the Killzone branding. For me, it never worked. Everyone hated that stupid twist at the end of Killzone 2 where you were working towards finding the Helgen leader, and then that dude that was meant to be like the rebel angry man just shot him, and it was like, mate, what are you doing? And so that, for me, there's so much more to be gained by just severing the Killzone branding. All the stuff with the Helgen, all the Shadowfall, all the stuff about them trying to find the new home world, and it was just, oh mate, I cannot say enough times how much better off I think that studio is without Killzone, just because at least they could inject some primary colors into the damn thing.
You know, well, they did try to do that with Shadowfall, Scott, and it kind of went against everything the first two Killzone games.
I did like the little owl. Kind of, you could send the little owl out. That was nice.
You could do that. You definitely could. I mean, I, like Ben Roy, I'm here for them bringing back Killzone and Resistance. So I don't know where you stand on that, but I'm going to very swiftly move on to the next story. Scott Tilford, Because it's been 2 weeks since we've had any GTA 6 news, there mm-hmm. is a rumor going around, and I picked this up on Charlie Intel, which is primarily known for being a Call of Duty website, you know, reporting on Call of Duty and stuff, and that's because Tom Henderson, who is apparently a pretty notable Call of Duty leaker primarily, tweeted out, quote, "For the first time ever in a GTA title, GTA 6 will have a female and male protagonist." Now, this has been, this is like kind of linking to a rumor that's been going around for a long time that going forward, there will be a female playable protagonist in GTA 6. And I just, for me, I think that's like an interesting idea and something that's kind of like long overdue, especially if GTA is going to stick with multiple different characters as their protagonist, you know, letting you switch like they did in GTA 5. And I hope this isn't just kind of like a kind of customization thing like you get in a lot of games like Assassin's Creed, for instance, where you get to be either a male or female hero. I hope this is two distinct characters at the very least. And, you know, the female character gets their own distinct personality and their own distinct arc, just like Franklin, Trevor, and Michael did in GTA 5, rather than just be kind of a creator character avatar stand-in thing. If this does happen.
Yeah, that's the thing though, because the leak is already surrounding the idea that you could pick between the two. It makes it feel more like what more devs are going with, the sort of catch-all, we can do both, don't worry about it. And just sort of, like you said, Assassin's Creed has it, Immortals Phoenix Rising has it. And I would want a written story about what it's like being a woman in the world of GTA, because I think they've set up various sort of different things over the years. And it's like Rockstar have matured so much as a studio. And you know, and you contrast like the writing at the beginning of GTA, you know, versus the way that someone like, it's Sadie, isn't it, that's in Red Dead 2?
Yeah.
Who's like Sadie, just an absolute badass. And it's like, you could do, I would have had her have a whole separate game. I would take that, you know, as like a spin-off thing or something. And I kind of, but at the same time, you know, it's Dan Houser that was writing all those characters over the years, and he himself who matured alongside those characters. And obviously the Houser brothers formed Rockstar and everything, and now he's left. So it's like, you've got Sam Houser in his place. Sam's the guy that wanted to do all the hot coffee stuff from San Andreas. He was the dude that literally emailed the workers at the time and said that they would release the game with the hot coffee sex scenes on the disc, and then he would patch the game after retail to literally, quote unquote, unleash the darkness. So he loves a bit of that. So I don't know how much I trust Big Sam Houser writing anything that's more mature than that, but I love the idea of it. But I would want a proper written female character in the world of GTA. And even then, the world of GTA has for quite a while sort of been gaming South Park, and even, you know, Trey Parker, Matt Stone. Yeah, that's the right way around. I used to always get them wrong when I was a kid. Matt Parker and Trey Stone. The other way around. They said that the real world is so hard to lampoon right now because it feels like such a crazy over-the-top space. And I wonder if that's, for me, that was the problem with GTA 5. It all kind of felt a bit toothless. And I don't know, the more mainstream GTA got, or the bigger it got, like GTA 5 still felt like this apology tour to me. So I don't really know where you take 6. Like, do you try and give it some more cartoonish, overblown energy that the original trilogy had on PS2? Or do you try and do something more gritty, like GTA 4, but with a female protagonist? I don't know.
I think we're at like a fascinating turning point, not just for GTA, but Rockstar as a whole. Like you said, like Dan Houser, who was so instrumental in writing all of, you know, like the big Rockstar experiences, is no longer there. And of course, he had co-writers who are still there, but it does feel like, or I guess it is open to interpretation at the moment, how much the writing on this series is going to be different going forward without that core voice, you know, at the helm of it. And it is going to be fascinating to see how they tackle the tone going forward. Are they going to continue GTA 5 and, you know, like you said, be perhaps a bit more apologetic and a bit wackier with a character like Trevor, who is, you know, just unapologetically violent and deviant and, you know, all of those things? Or will they adopt a more mature tone like Red Dead Redemption 2, like what GTA 4 strove to achieve? I'm not sure, but I think the idea of, like, you know, focusing on a female character at all in this space, like you said, like, that's fascinating, and it isn't something they've done before. And they've also proven in other games that they can write really interesting and compelling, you know, female characters. So putting, you know, one of those constructs at the heart of the game to be the protagonist, I do agree and hope that they get their individual arcs, that they get properly written scenarios.
Yeah. I wonder if you swapped Trevor and had, if Trevor was a woman, I think I would have loved that character. Like, if you had this whole world of like really aggressive gangsters and they have all these expectations of, you know, going up against this female leader of a potential gang or whatever, and they come across female Trevor just stomping someone's head in, this brain on the bottom of the boot, and then she just looks up like, yeah, what do you need? Right, okay, let's, like, I would love that energy, but it's, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if they have the writing team to be able to pull that off, but I've wanted a female character, a female protagonist in GTA since, I don't even know, GTA 4, for as long as we've been covering
100%. That kind of thing. I'll be here for this. Like I said, you know, at the moment, this is just from one leaker who primarily leaks Call of Duty stuff. But it is something that, you know, comes up time and time again. And it does kind of feel right that this is the time where they'd finally allow it to happen. Like I said, especially if we're branching off to multiple different characters again, which I definitely want to see going forward. I know a lot of people don't like that in GTA 5, but for me, it was a cool way to see three different perspectives. I know, I dug it as well, man. I have a double whammy. Oh, sorry.
No, very quickly. I was going to say, I do want them to do more with it mechanically. Like, I like the idea that you zoom out and zoom back into someone, but the only mission that tends to get related to is like the skyscraper infiltration bit, where like one guy is rappelling down, someone else is the sniper, someone else is on a different floor, and you just jump between them. I kind of like the idea of them structuring missions around that.
Yeah, you are right. I mean, the reason I played Michael the most in that game was just because he had the slow motion ability, you know what I mean? And it's like, I think you need to make them a bit more distinct, perhaps, and not make one play style preferable for people. I think each of them needs a more compelling reason to jump between them rather than just the narrative they have. But yeah, like, I think there's like so much potential to build on GTA 5. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're going to see so much more from GTA 5 going forward, because we've got the bloody remaster coming out later this year, GTA Online and GTA 5. So that's going to be interesting to see if they change anything. The re-remaster, mate. The remaster, the triple remake. The
endless edition.
Special Oreo edition. I don't know, but it's going to be fascinating. Yeah, I've got a double whammy of God of War news next, actually, Scott Tilford, because Roger Clark, a.k.a. Arthur Morgan from Red Dead Redemption 2. So there's a nice little segue there between the Rockstar news. I'm not sure if you noticed or appreciated that.
I did, mate.
He was on Instagram earlier last week. This was picked up by the Gaming Bible, who reported that he actually put a story on Instagram about job opportunities at Sony Santa Monica Studio, which is obviously in production on the next God of War. So they were speculating, and now fans are speculating whether or not he's going to be involved in some way with this sequel. And to me, you can put Roger Clark in everything, because I think the dude is awesome and a great actor, and I want to see him in some kind of God of War sequel, playing a god, perhaps. Like, I'm here for that.
All my favorite things in God of War is that when you had I can't think of their names now. I'm lacking on the information this afternoon. I'm very much burnt out trying to do this at 4 o'clock after a day of the banter. But yeah, the two brothers that were in the original God of War, the God of War 2018 one, where you had, it was Nolan North and Troy Baker, and they were the two brothers fighting with each other. Whatever those guys were called, Modi and someone else. I like the idea.
Magni and Modi. The two gods. Thors.
The two dudes.
Are you talking about Thors?
No. The dude that Atreus kills, and then Atreus is like, oh my god. Like, I can't believe that I just did this. And then, he's totally fine with it.
That was Magni and Modi. I want to say it's Magni and Modi.
Am I making
that up?
Whoever they are, Tweedledum. I love the idea of finding out later that was Troy Baker and Nolan North. Troy Baker is also the small little weasel thing that you can unlock, the little rat skier thing you can get. Anyway, just to sort of throw some random tidbit in that Troy Baker made me think of. But point being that someone like Roger Clark, or whatever his full name was, I don't know how much he could stand out by himself. Like, you know, you hear Troy Baker, you hear Nolan North, you can completely hear, you know exactly who they are. Whereas I think after Red Dead, I don't know whether he would just sound like Arthur Morgan placed in God of War. Depends how big his role is, I guess. But he obviously shot to the top of everybody's recognition lists after Red Dead. So yeah, more from that dude.
Well, I mean, like, for one, they've got to put in like a boy joke. You've got to give Christopher Judge doing his best boy, and then Roger Clark doing his best boy. But I think, you know, you mentioned something there. You mentioned that, you know, like, Troy Baker now is so recognizable that no matter what role he's playing, you know it's Troy Baker.
Yeah,
that recently came to a head in Spider-Man Miles Morales, where he's playing the big dick CEO guy. And I just thought, like, you're just playing Troy Baker in this part. Like, you're just doing the Troy Baker voice. And, like, it's good, and it's solid.
His voice.
I know it is his voice, but there's also, like, a disconnect now where I know it's the actor. And I think with Roger Clark, even though his Arthur Morgan is so iconic, perhaps there's more ways for him to blend into whatever role he's given and kind of like take it on more, to the point where there isn't that kind of distance where I'm just saying, you're Roger Clark doing Roger Clark, you know what I mean? I feel like with video game voice acting and video game motion capture, a lot of times developers are choosing from the same pool of actors, and that's cool in a way because they are very talented, but there are so many people they could like turn to that would do perhaps just as good of a job, or if not a better job, you know, doing something else, not being so recognizable. You know, it's kind of like casting Robert De Niro in something. Like, you see Robert De Niro first and foremost, whereas if you cast someone, you know, who hasn't done as much or isn't as instantly recognizable, they might be able to slip into a role in a way that's slightly more convincing and immersive, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like I've gone a bit off topic just talking about acting in general, but it's just something I thought of. After Miles Morales.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing that made me think of was in Hellblade, like getting Melissa Jurgens, I think that's her full name, to be Senua, where she hadn't acted before and she just came out of nowhere and completely dominated it. And it's like, if someone has this latent talent that the right sort of casting director can pick up on, then yeah, I would always take that. I mean, as much as I love the likes of Troy Baker and Nolan North and, you know, X number of the voice actors, I would always take some new newcomer. They'd always bring something fresh to the table. Like Hellblade, for me, all of its faults in the puzzle design and stuff, the acting is absolutely unbelievably good. And I think you got that because it was someone proving themselves and having a lot to, you know, put into the project.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
100%. I want to see like more talent rise up in that same way. You know what I mean? Like, this is like the best person for the job. Like, give them a try. You know, give them a go. See what happens. Because like you said, in Hellblade's terms, like that turned out so well. I also have the second part of this God of War news, Scott Tilford, and it's something I know you're going to have a lot of opinions on, and that's because David Jaffe, I always get it mixed up. I think it's
definitely
Jaffe. Is it
Jaffe? Yeah. Big
I thought
Jaffers.
It was Jaffe, yeah. I keep getting it mixed up with, like, Jaffa Cakes, man. It's my fault there. David Jaffe, who obviously, you know, directed the original God of War, was instrumental in its creation, has been playing
Mr.
God
Twisted
of War
Metal.
2018. I think, yeah, and Twisted Metal, has been playing God of War 2018 for the very first time. I think he's playing it on Twitch. He's streaming it either way. And in one of these streams, he's been answering questions and stuff, and he said... quote, "I'm sure the next God of War will be PS5/PS4. Of course it will." And that everyone's kind of like running with that. Obviously, he's not involved with the production of God of War 2, God of War Ragnarok, whatever you want to call it. But if he's convinced that it's going to be cross-gen, I feel like it backs up claims and reports that we've heard, you know, at the end of last year that it's going to be this cross-gen release and it won't be PlayStation 5 exclusive, which I keep going backwards and forwards on, man. I don't know whether I'm all in on the idea of them making the most of the 120 million PlayStation 4s that are out there, or whether I want to see the beefiest version of God of War Ragnarok as possible as a PlayStation 5 exclusive.
I'm 1,000,000% the latter. Like, I want to be all peace and love for all, and I am if it was me, but I want a PS5 game. I don't care about you making it work on the previous gen. I didn't drop £500,000 to get this thing to sit and look at it and go, oh, well, you know, if I play the old thing, it up-reses to like 4K or auto HDRs to this thing. I thought I would care more about that. And I did initially. And I spent most of my holiday the last couple of weeks, the couple of weeks around Christmas, playing as many different games as possible. And it's not that they run brilliantly, but the second you play something that's actually built for the PS5 or built for next gen, then it's night and day, like in terms of just the overall smoothness, like the amount of different graphical fidelity features that are there. Things that just make me go, I want to get on with this generation, to be honest. Can we crack on? Because we're just sort of, I don't know, like, were the consoles released too early? Like, is it just that kind of thing where not enough games are ready? Like, you know, like Sony have got their slate sort of laid out for 2021. But Microsoft certainly don't. Like, the only thing that's coming on their side for now is Halo. And I just kind of go, well, we bought these new systems. We sort of had faith in you guys that you'll have next gen offerings. And I want them. Like, God of War 2, God of War Ragnarok was always going to be this PS5 game. And I think because they won't just nail it down, it's a little bit annoying because they're just sort of, every time they get asked about it, more directly, obviously, when it's not Jaffe, when it's someone more like Corey Barlog, they just sort of say, well, you know, we don't have anything to say at this time. And it's like, that can be fine, but I think you're kind of, you're staring disappointment in the face and you won't acknowledge it. Because at some point in the project's design, there'll be something they can't do because they can't take full advantage of the SSD or they can't take full advantage of the next gen hardware or whatever. And that's just going to suck for me because I don't know, like just completely personally, completely subjectively, I want a PS5 game and I didn't spend the money to play an up-resed PS4 game or a version that was made to work on both. Like, look at Cyberpunk. If Cyberpunk proves anything, it's that it's held back so much by those older systems.
Yeah, I fully kind of...
I agree,
especially when I first got the PlayStation 5, I was like, yeah, I want more PlayStation 5 games. Like, give me experiences that justify this console. And I wonder whether it's kind of like a knock-on effect of Sony embracing exclusives over the past generation that they've gotten, like, more money than ever from selling these games. Like, you know, you look at Spider-Man, you look at Ghost of Tsushima, you look at The Last of Us Part 2 or whatever. Like, these games sell so much and they're making so much money from that. In a way that they just never did on like the PlayStation 3 era of consoles. Like Uncharted obviously made a lot of money on the PlayStation 3, but it was nowhere near like the level of interest and the level of kind of like brand recognition that Sony has built over the past generation on these exclusives. So I wonder whether they're simply weighing up how much money they might lose by only releasing it on a PlayStation 5 that has a 20 million person install base when they could release it on the PlayStation 4 as well and get like a guaranteed 20 million copies sold and that
it makes all the sense.
Yeah, like it used to be back in the day, I think that exclusives would, you know, drive console sales, would encourage people to pick up consoles alongside the games. But now I wonder whether they're just their own beast to the point where, you know, like they can just live off these exclusives and make loads of money, and that's why they're so kind of resistant to fully migrate their franchises over to the next gen at the moment.
Well, that's 1,000,000% what Xbox is doing. Like, it's just sort of like, we don't care where you play this, that here's a bunch of different access points, whether it's an Xbox from 2013 or it's the Xbox Series systems or you've got the half-step systems or whatever else. They've fully committed to that. It's all part of their message. I think the thing that annoys me at the core of Sony is that they went back and forward on that so much. Like, they were initially, we believe in generations, and then it's like, actually, no, even some games from 2021 are still going to be coming out on the PS4. It's not that I obviously have a core problem with people enjoying games. Like, you know, the more the merrier. Like, you play as many different games as you can. But I also think it's worth addressing, and it is valid that they put new systems out, and the new systems should have things that show off what they can do in the same way that, you know, any sort of game dev can make these big over-the-top lavish productions, these big AAA productions, you know, and they want to make them for the biggest, you know, most capable hardware possible. And I want to see what those projects look like. I don't want things to be held back by older tech. You know, you could have, like, I see both sides of it, obviously, but I want to see the newest, most lavish, most over-the-top thing. And maybe there's a way to please both sides. It's not like we haven't had cross-gen releases before. But I mean, it reminds me of like, you know, Splinter Cell Double Agent or something, where like the 360 version was one thing and the original Xbox One was something else completely. And maybe that's the case. Maybe that's how you please both people. But I don't know, until they saw...
always so weird, that though, like having two completely different versions of the same game. Like, I remember like looking, Double Agent is just absolutely blow my mind because that's sparked so many memories. I remember looking in official Xbox magazine about the regular edition of double agent and being like, that's not what I got. That's not the game that I bought. And I have no idea why.
I played both, right? And there's features in the original Xbox One. There was a great feature in the original double agent on original Xbox, where if you got seen by a guard, you could push different buttons in like a quick time event and you could get out of being seen. You would like arrest them or take them down and keep going. The next gen, quote unquote, one, the 360 one, didn't have that at all. And the next gen one looked gorgeous, but was still kind of Chaos Theory's engine and just felt really weird. And the alarm system was different. And the suit thing on the back of Sam Fisher and everything, the light detection thing just looks completely different. But that was, for me, one of the most notable times that a cross-gen experiment happened. And I liked the original one better, but that was because it had a different mechanic in. So they have all those questions to answer. How do you maintain feature parity? How do you satisfy everybody? But I just think someone will be disappointed if they can't just do a big old PS5 thing. Because what are we doing? What are we doing as an industry if we're still thundering for, you need the new hardware, the next generation starts. Does it start here, Sony? Are you going to wait the next 3 years?
Well, I mean, you know what? I think there is a big distinction to be made as well, because when the PlayStation 4 came out, like, that thing had no exclusives for like 3 years. You know, I remember
Knack
the question
right there,
they continued asking.
Shadow 4 was right there.
No, shh. No. Knack bad. Knack no good.
You were just saying about Shadow 4
game is bad. No, but it was not a system sell. It's not the level of God of War or Uncharted. No. And you know, for like the first few years of the consoles, life cycle, we were saying, where's the exclusives? What have they got up their sleeve? Mm-hmm. But this time, because they've like hit the ground running, like they don't have that luxury of time, they don't have that handover period where there's no big exclusives, like arguably Horizon Zero Dawn 2, God of War 2, the upcoming, no doubt, Spider-Man 2. Like, they're some of the biggest games Sony has on their slate, probably for like the entire generation to come.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see them being like, well, they're going to be ready. They're going to be ready earlier than they were on the last gen. So we need to revise our plan. We can't do the same thing. We've got to adapt and stuff. And I guess time will tell, Scott, whether it'll only be you who's disappointed or whether it'll be someone else entirely.
Well, judging by the hashtag discourse, like, a lot of people are already on, if there's sides to pick, then my side in regards to wanting as much as possible out of the PS5. Like you said, you went back and forward on it anyway. And obviously, brass tacks, I'll be completely satisfied with God of War Ragnarok. The story means more than some graphical fidelity stuff. But I just, on a base game design level, like something that the next gen sort of didn't necessarily prioritize, but offered, is the idea of games built without loading times and building something that could only be playable the next gen. And that's why Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart isn't going to be on PS4. And that, for me, is so fundamentally exciting, because you can't do it on previous gen. And I want to see more stuff like that. Like, what can game devs fundamentally only do on new gen tech? And if you pair that with an IP as big as God of War, then I want to see what that is. And they got so close with the 2018 one as well. Like, the everything's all in one shot, but then it's a caveat because you go through the trees of Yggdrasil to sort of mask it, some of the loading. And like, they were so close to pulling that whole thing off. And for the most part, they still did. But I'm super curious on an artistry, tech, creativity level, where I want to see game devs push as much as possible. And I don't want last gen stuff to be a glass ceiling that they just occasionally bump into.
It's kind of like weird owning these consoles right now, because we've got them, we're loving them, but we're like, okay, what experiences do we have to look forward to that we couldn't get elsewhere? And I wonder whether we're just looking at it wrong, because that's how it's been every other generation, and that's just not how it's going to be. Or whether, you know, some studios just have like these aces up their sleeves that they haven't shown yet. Like, I was looking earlier at the release date list for games coming out this year, and there's kind of like, there's not that much penciled in at the minute. Like, there's a lot we kind of know about, but nothing firmly in the release. The release schedule is looking quite vacant, and I'm just kind of, my mind is running wild with imagination and wondering what those games could be. What PlayStation 5 exclusives are going to blow me away, or Xbox Series X exclusives are going to make me want to splash, you know, £500 on an Xbox Series X and pick that up? Like, they've got to be there somewhere. I just don't know where.
I think
they are.
It doesn't have to be platform exclusives, but next gen exclusives, stuff like I said, features, fundamentals, mechanics, whatever, art design, things that could only be done on the next gen. That's what I want to see. I want to like make the investment worthwhile and just see what they're coming out with. Because the calendar's pretty sparse. Obviously, the industry was impacted by 2020. Like, you can't get away from that. So maybe it is just a case of waiting things out. But I think, to bring it back to Sony again, I don't think they've been very clear. Like, they've just gone back and forward on it. And I've always said they're such a reactive company, and it feels like that's entirely what mm-hmm. they are doing. Like, even, what was it, like 3 weeks before the PS5 came out, and it was like, oh, we've got the PlayStation Plus collection because the Game Pass is a thing and we can do that as well. So we sort of just do it on the side. And I'm like, oh, Sony, like, can you not just lead with something instead of waiting for someone else?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's all that stuff. But I understand you have one more story, Josh Grant.
I do, one quick one. And this was something I saw on Games Radar. Mm-hmm. Noted that something Battlefront 3 related might be going down, because they were looking at the Star Wars Battlefront subreddit, mm-hmm. who in the post on there noticed that a bunch of actors who worked on Star Wars Battlefront 2 were actually all doing motion capture in Los Angeles in November 2020. So this was Janina Gavanka, who played Aiden Versio. We've got Anthony Scotti, who was Admiral Versio. We've got TJ Romani, aka Del Mico. So all of these were characters from... all these were characters from Battlefront 2, and if they're working on something together, it kind of could suggest that we've got something in this universe coming soon. And even though, you know, Battlefront 2 wrapped up all of its content mid last year or whatever, I feel like that game was pulled around so much, and there's such a dedicated fan base there, that at this point, a Battlefront 3 just makes a lot of sense. Like, EA is slowly, hopefully, kind of pulling back the Star Wars license and kind of maybe doing it justice, starting with turning Battlefront around and starting with Jedi Fallen Order, that I think, and they might mess it up, Scott, because they messed it up twice already, but they might be able to finally do it justice. Third time might be the charm.
Maybe. You know? I mean, I tell you what, Josh Brown, I love that it's taken them this long to realize that if they just let creatives be creatives, respect the time and the development, and don't try and nickel and dime the consumer, maybe things will do well. Like, it's just, maybe just give it a little bit of time instead of just sort of, you know, trying to pull and stretch things into a million different directions and then siphon it off and charge you for the full picture. I think in this case, because it's those three characters, did you play the extra DLC for Battlefront 2 where Aiden was really old? And had a...
No, but I saw images of it where she was really old.
I didn't finish it, but that was the thing. That character is pretty damn old by the end of Battlefront 2. That if you're gonna do more with that particular character in that timeline, I don't know if you even could. But I don't know if there's enough goodwill around Aiden, you know, in a way that would sort of, you know, carry across to the start of Battlefront 3 and have like the ongoing war and continue with them. Then maybe you could, but. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I read a thing the other day that the Mandalorian referenced the Inferno Squad and referenced stuff from Battlefront 2. So it's like, it does seem like somewhere there's like a more united vision of Star Wars going forward. Obviously it goes across different industries and stuff, but with the goodwill behind Mandalorian, I guess Star Wars is more approachable right now than it was after Rise of Skywalker, where everyone was just like, Disney have completely effed this.
I do think, you know, getting a bit off topic, I think like the Mandalorian is certainly started the new upturn in Star Wars after, you know, the last Jedi and the Rise of Skywalker. Season 2 is it's a completely different podcast, that's got. We'll have to jump into Ben Roy and Ewan's Mandalorian podcast and just come in with our
takes. Just make the news, lads, its own separate Star Wars thing, because I can't argue with those two people on Star Wars anymore. I just have to say things in an echo chamber and have you maybe go, yeah, maybe, and then I just move on to something else.
Just be too polite to fight you on it. Just be like, yeah, sure, man,
The Too Polite to Fight podcast, that's all it needs to be.
That's it. That's absolutely it. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I feel like Star Wars in general seems to be on the rise yet again. The rise of Skywalker, bish, bash, bosh. And I would take more games, you know, after Fallen Order. Like, I'm here for it, and I just hope EA has learned their lesson and isn't just going to try to make everything a live service or a multiplayer grind fest and actually do it justice. Like, just please chill out for once. Like, take your hands off it and just be like, go on, he's one for you. You do me a Star Wars game, and I won't complain about it. Like, if that's like, I want that to be EA's approach to this franchise going forward.
The thing is, it's strange because when Battlefront 2 started approaching the prequel stuff, that was one of the first times that any sort of major production had gone back to the prequels and just said, hey guys, it's okay. Like, you know, we can have fun with this. There's so much ephemera here that we're not making use of, from like Naboo Starfighters to just having fun on, I don't know, just even Jango Fett, like just being able to say like, hey, look, we can bring these dudes back. The sequel trilogy doesn't really have, you know, this sort of like bunch of planets or iconography or like characters, sure, Kylo, Rey, Finn, whatever. But it's not like we have scenes we can't wait to see in the game, or like battles that we can't wait to relive. I can't even think of any particular battle off the top of my head from the sequel trilogy, other than the very end of Rise of Skywalker. But that would just be a generic fight in the sky with, like, you know, 2,000 Star Destroyers. So I don't know. Like, I wonder what they're going to do. This, because it's these characters, I think it's DLC. And I think they're just going to keep going with Battlefront 2 as like a final sort of we're done thing. But maybe it is a pivot. I mean, I guess it could be either.
Well, I wonder whether if EA doesn't want to commit to another, you know, full-scale Battlefront game and call it Battlefront 3, maybe they're worried that in the mainstream, the name of the franchise hasn't kind of recovered enough. I wonder if they just make Battlefront itself like a platform for content, like Rainbow Six Siege or something like that, you know what I mean? Kind of like bring together the best of Battlefront 1, Battlefront 2, and just make this kind of like Battlefront multiplayer thing where you have like these heroes. Perhaps they're not coming back for story stuff. Perhaps they're coming back as like playable characters in the multiplayer or something like that. You know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be full-blown story campaign or something. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, if they just rebranded it and just called it Star Wars Battlefront again, you know, don't call it Star Wars Battlefront again, although even then I would probably take that. But just have that be, you know, the all-in-one Rocket League Overwatch style thing where it's just Star Wars Battlefront and they don't have to worry about it, because the last generation was so many experiments with that sort of stuff. And like, when do you call it a separate installment? When do you, like, Overwatch 2, do we even need the number and stuff like that? So if they just were bringing these characters back, there's one piece of story DLC and we're going to rebrand everything thing and it's just Star Wars Battlefront, for me that makes more sense and would go down better than we're doing sequel trilogy stuff, because I just think everyone would be like, oh god, we're not ready yet, we're not ready to fully appreciate the little that sort of trilogy got right. But anyway, not to worry, for now we are the News Lads. This has been the News Lads. Let us know what you think over on social media. Come find us, have a bant, and let us know what's going on with your thoughts on all these different stories. But yes, for now, this has been the News Lads. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, goodbye. It's been lovely. I'm losing my marbles. It's so close to the end of the day, but I've loved it, as always.
As always, mate. Yes, this time next week, we'll be right back, and we'll catch all of you guys next time as well. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.